on this week's show. The Jamie Carragher Show takes over Sky Sports and CBS. Insight about NWSL's TV coverage plans for this season. News on how ambitious Paramount Plus's plans are. Plus, we have letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section. I'm Christopher Harris, a.k.a. The Gaffer, joined alongside co-host Kartik Krishnire. If you're new to the World Soccer Talk podcast, we're your weekly guide for hardcore soccer fans who want to get the best out of soccer viewing options from around the world, whether it's online, television, apps, documentaries, YouTube, you name it. Kartik, we've got a lot to get to in this episode. Probably the best place to start is from this busy week of football, mostly from Europe. Of course, we've had, Copa Sudamericana, Copa Libertadores, we've had the CONCACAF Champions League, we've had Liga MX. A little bit later this week, we've got NWSL, you name it. But two things that came up this week, which are probably two of the biggest talking points. One of them, now from a TV analysis point of view, one of them came from the UK and one of them came from the US. The one from the US would have been Wednesday post-match with Jamie Carragher and Micah Richards and the CBS crew, kind of their post-match analysis and some of the things they got up to on that one. We also have Monday Night Football from Sky Sports in the UK. It's not available in the US, but anyone who's on social media or Twitter, especially on Monday evening or on Tuesday, would have seen tons of clips of Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher getting into it, having some discussions and banter and back and forth. The actual commonality between these two is that Jamie Carragher is front and center both in the UK and the US on some really hot soccer topics. I would say right now, Kartik, agree or disagree, Jamie Carragher is arguably the hottest soccer TV analyst in the game right now. What do you think?
Hottest in terms of on the most, maybe, I watched the whole segment with Neville. I thought that he came off second best, and actually he's a weak second best among two people. So hot in terms of, yeah, he's on a lot. I'm not sure he's giving the best analysis.
Yeah, but let's go there though first, because like for a lot of listeners, I only saw the clips. I think you saw more of the coverage. So from Sky Sports on Monday Night Football. And the main topic, right, was Trent Alexander-Arnold. Was that the main topic?
The whole Euro team, right? They selected their 23, but obviously Trent Alexander-Arnold is the talking point and has been the talking point since Jurgen Klopp came out and I think kind of had a pop at Gareth Southgate, basically saying I coach this guy all every match and he's world class and can't understand why Trippier. Who is off the radar for some of these British pundits, right? Because he's playing in La Liga. Trippier and Walker and Reece James could be selected ahead of him. So that was, I think, one of the bigger bones of contention. But then it was just selecting their entire 23. The thing I should mention for our listeners is you can, after it airs on Monday Night Football, Sky Sports Football, and it's not Sky Sports, it's Sky Sports Football on YouTube, you can subscribe and legally get these clips in the United States. So you will not see them at the time they air in the UK, but you will see them the next morning. So the Monday Night Football clips are on YouTube by Tuesday morning, and you can see them in the United States legally that way. But you can actually go and see this whole segment, which was about a half an hour long.
So Gary Neville, in terms of an analyst, one of the top in the game, right? One of the best analysts out there as far as really tactically analyzing a game and breaking it down and having some strong opinions and backing them up with some good evidence and some good opinions. Jamie Carragher, was there some of that there on that Monday Night Football from Sky Sports, would you say?
I think the one really good point he made was that he would take Jude Bellingham to the tournament because Bellingham is playing at a very high level at Borussia Dortmund. He's playing regularly, which we weren't sure he would this season, but Dortmund is not as good as we thought they'd be, actually. So that's why. And Axel Witsel, who's phenomenal world-class player, has been out for most of the season. So he slid into that role. But that was a good point, because his point on that was, look, I think if you, for your final guy, if you're taking 23 and you've already gotten your, got 22 guys, you've got three keepers, et cetera, you want that, that next guy to be, that final guy to be a guy that's not going to upset the dressing room. So you don't want to necessarily take a veteran player. And then you, you want a guy that you know is going to be part of your plans for the next tournament and the tournament beyond that and the tournament beyond that. So even if Bellingham doesn't fit into your plans this time, he probably does in 2022 and 2024 and 2026. And the point also that was not made by Carragher, but is probably factors into this, is England has been eliminated, obviously, from the U21 Euros. So there's no summer tournament commitment for the at the youth level for England this summer. They were eliminated at the group stage this past week. So Bellingham would be available.
So what is it about Jamie Carragher that puts him in the limelight, in the spotlight, and makes it, in quotation marks, the Jamie Carragher show, both on Sky Sports Monday Night Football and on CBS's coverage? What's your opinion on that one, Kartik?
He's a jovial guy. He's a likable guy. He's got his Scouse accent and his kind of Scouse sense of humor, which I appreciate. And I've been around a lot of people from Merseyside in my life, so I actually do appreciate that. I think, though, when you're and the CBS studio seems to fit him, because Mika Richards has kind of the same sense of humor, and Kate Abdo is kind of more lighthearted in the way she presents. What I saw on Sky on Monday Night Football was a deadly serious Gary Neville going through squad selection for a tournament that he, and we know what an England man, Gary Neville is, a tournament he believes is the best shot for England to win a major trophy in his lifetime. So maybe it was the wrong occasion for Carragher to be joking and palling around, right? Because there were times that Neville seemed to be, you know, serious and saying, let me finish. And you could see in his face he was angry and he wanted to make certain points. Or was kind of dismissive of Carragher's thoughts on something. So I think it's his personality. I think he's very he's very light in the way he presents stuff. But he makes some good points also. Like I mentioned, the Jude Bellingham point, I think it's very good. Actually, if I'm in the position of being the England manager, I probably take Carragher's advice and do that. I think even if Bellingham is not going to play, he's 17 years old. He's already a starter in the Bundesliga on a team fighting for a Champions League spot. Should have had a goal in Champions League, quite frankly, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, against Manchester City. You know, he picked Ederson's pocket. So, yeah, I think I take that guy. I agree with Carragher on that. I think if you have one, if the last guy on your roster is not going to play anyway, might as well take a guy that you think is a big, good one for the future.
I think with Jamie, it's all about him, and that's not in a bad way. I mean, I find him entertaining. He has the gift of the gab. He is very, I mean, he's trying to manipulate people sometimes. I think Micah Richards is probably a good example of that, where he's kind of nudging or pushing, trying to get Micah to say something so that Jamie can react, or Jamie will actually ask a question to Micah to get have him go down a certain path so that Jamie can kind of then jump in with his opinion. I like him in terms of he's very watchable. He is very jovial, like you mentioned. His analysis is not the greatest. So, like, for example, on Wednesday's broadcast, I think post-match after the PSG Bayern game, Jamie said something to along the lines of, like, well, Kylian Mbappe has got to really show it on the biggest stage. That's still yet to be seen. Well, this is the same guy, the French striker, who scored one of the goals in France winning the World Cup final against Croatia just a couple of years ago, or 2.5 years ago. So, I mean, maybe he meant on the club stage, not on the actual international stage. But still, some of the things he says are not the great, the best analysis by any means. Going back for a second to the Sky Sports Monday Night Football, what was his opinion? Now, this is Monday, of course, but what was his opinion about Trent Alexander-Arnold? Did he want him to be on the England squad or not?
Yeah, he not only did he want him to be on the England squad, this is where I really got annoyed with him. I thought he was advocating for Alexander-Arnold as a Liverpool fan. That's the way it came across to me, and was adamant about it, and was dismissive of one, Neville's arguments about Trippier, James, and Walker, and also the head-to-head comparison with Reece James that Neville was making. And then, two, even more dismissive of Neville saying, okay, I'm taking my opinion out of this. This is what Gareth Southgate thinks. This is why he's going to make this selection, why I Gary Neville, who has coached at the international level and has coached the team in La Liga, right, even though he didn't do a great job at Valencia. I mean, he has more knowledge of what a coach is thinking about these selections. Why Gary Neville believes that Gareth Southgate is not taking Trent Alexander-Arnold to the Euros, and gave multiple reasons. Trippier, he thinks the combination of Trippier being experienced, being a guy that can play in a back four or back five, now playing for Diego Simeone, which means you're defending an awful lot, right? Because that's Atleti. And then Walker's experience and ability to play also as a center back, and then just thinking Reece James is a better one-on-one defender than Alexander-Arnold, that those three guys are all ahead of him. From the perspective of Gareth Southgate, Carragher didn't seem to appreciate or respect this point, that this is what the England manager is thinking. I mean, to him, that was just, Liverpool, they won the Champions League, they won the Premier League, and he's going on about this stuff.
Right.
And it just, to me, sounded very fanny.
What's interesting, though, too, I mean, Gary Neville can get that way, too, about Manchester United. So it's, in some ways, it's good to have those two both on that show, because both of those clubs hate each other. And both of them are very protective of their own teams in terms of, and it does skew their analysis for sure, because, Carragher, we saw on Tuesday some of the weaknesses of Trent in terms of his defensive abilities, and saw a couple of clear examples of why he shouldn't be starting in this England team in the Euros this summer. But the thing about Jamie is that he's a master of social media. So I did not see Monday Night Football, Sky Sports. All I saw was the clips on social media, and a lot of them were Jamie Carragher making fun of Gary Neville. It was kind of like, here's Jamie in the studio laughing and then kind of pointing at Gary Neville, and Gary Neville's kind of there just, not saying anything and just getting pissed off. Same thing too, I think, with Wednesday's broadcast, well, Tuesday too, but CBS's broadcast too, is a lot of the post-match footage, not a lot, some of the post-match footage is reactions, Jamie Carragher's reactions to the goals that are being scored. Micah Richards's reactions, and Alex Scott and Kate Abdo. So you have the cameras focused on them, even in the studio, even after Bayern scores a goal and Thomas Muller scores a beautiful header. What does Jamie Carragher do? And you see him jumping up out of his seat, running around, dancing. And it's for the cameras, because he knows post-match, if there's any interesting clips there, they'll put it on television. And also on social media, and then he can retweet that. I think that's the part that has made him what I would say is arguably the hottest TV analyst right now, is he knows how to game social media. And he's doing these things, and it's working, because you and me talking about this for like 10 or 15 minutes about Jamie Carragher. I mean, yes, the football was amazing this week. It was a great week of games from around the world, but we're talking about Jamie Carragher. The other thing about this, Kartik, too, is that we have to remember that NBC Sports has the rights to Sky Sports' coverage of Monday Night Football and other things that that NBC could go ahead and use from time to time or incorporate into their broadcast. The tricky thing about Monday Night Football is that from NBC's perspective, for a game that's on Monday, the second game, it usually ends about 5 o'clock. And by the time they do the post-match reaction, it's then 10 after 5, and then it's a hard stop at 5:30, and you've got commercial breaks in between there. So there's not a lot of time to actually kind of bring in Sky Sports. Also, at the same time, too, you've got the production team working with Liam McHugh and the two Robbies or whoever's in the studio on that Monday. So there isn't really much of an opportunity to bring it in unless you say, hey, two Robbies and Danny Higginbotham and Lee McHugh on Monday, you guys take a break. We're actually going to go ahead and use more of Sky Sports' footage and kind of integrate that broadcast more into what we're doing. I guess at the end of the day, Kartik, I just feel that we're missing out. NBC Sports could be incorporating some of this footage into what they're doing in stateside to make it more exciting. And I just feel that we're missing out, that there's a lot of viewers and listeners that are not seeing this really good entertainment and good television.
Yeah, and conversely, it seems like NBC goes to Sky Sports for kind of these boring pitside studios hosted by Kelly Cates or whoever that don't give you a whole lot more than you're getting on NBC. And we're missing out on these really good segments on Monday Night Football, the debate, some of the other things that might liven up the broadcast a little bit. I don't propose getting rid of the NBC Monday studio hosted by Liam McHugh or Ahmed Farid. I think that that's fine, but they should have maybe a 15-minute segment where they go to Sky Sports, where they have clips from Sky Sports to liven it up, because Monday Night Football is the premier Sky Sports broadcast, right? That's really kind of they've developed that into.
It's the top football show.
Yeah, right. Yeah. They've developed it into the top football bumper show or studio show around the games because everything else is in the books for the weekend. There are things to talk about, and this debate. I think they were planning on having the debate about the 23 anyway, but because Klopp had chosen, and we know Klopp this year has been very aggressive in the media to say the least. Klopp had chosen the post match of the Arsenal match to question Gareth Southgate's judgment about Trent Alexander-Arnold, which, look, I get that. If you're a manager, you're trying to build your player up, right?
Yeah.
Always. And maybe more club managers need to do that and say, you know what, if an international manager is not picking my guy, I don't know what's wrong with this international manager. In any event, Klopp doing that set the stage for this debate on Monday that we didn't get to see on the coverage in the U.S. Then again, maybe who's selected for the Euro squad is not of interest to NBC viewers because the Euros, or in NBC's mind, because the Euros are on ESPN. I don't. Maybe that plays a factor in all this.
It's probably partly a factor, but and some could argue that the England squad for the Euros is not a topic that most Americans would be interested in. I disagree, though, because it is very integrated into the Premier League. Even though, you know, so at the weekend, Liverpool plays. I mean, Monday, this discussion about Liverpool's performance and the performance of Alexander-Arnold, as well as other topics. Then they're looking ahead to, okay, right, Real Madrid in the Champions League. They're talking about the England squad. It's, to me, it's all integrated. It's the same player or the same players that are often competing in these different tournaments. And yes, you may not have the rights to all these tournaments, but based on one individual player, if we look at Alexander-Arnold, it is important to kind of monitor his performance and how well is he's doing for Liverpool or not. Does that impact his play for qualifying for the national team as well as in the Champions League? How does that affect him too? So I think it's integral. I think it is topical. I think it is timely. I think even if it doesn't have anything to do with the Premier League, directly, indirectly, it does. And you mean coming up for this weekend's games with NBC Sports' studio team talking about, say, a Liverpool match. And that would be a great opportunity to talk about Trent Alexander-Arnold's performances midweek, as well as question marks about whether or not he's going to make the England squad and the pressure that he's under, the pressure, whether it's fair or unfair, the Klopp's under too. I mean, there's so many different factors. And I'm sure the pandemic it plays into this, Kartik, in terms of NBC's decision-making abilities with everything that's been going on, and as well as games being staggered, the kickoffs. So it's long days, right? Kickoff time, say at 7:30 in the morning, and then by the time the final game finishes, sometimes it's like, what, 5:30 in the evening?
Yeah, Eastern time.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's like 10 hours of non-stop coverage, whether it's on going from Peacock to NBC, ESPN, back to Peacock, back to NBC. It's a long day. So I would like to see, like, maybe next season, maybe that a really, hopefully by then everything's okay and we can actually see the fruits of the partnership between Sky Sports and NBC Sports, because ultimately they're owned by the same company, which is Comcast. So maybe we will give, I don't know, to me, maybe give them a little bit of a break and then see what they do next season when everything returns to normal.
Yeah, and I think the Euros are also kind of critical for NBC because the transfer market and the next Premier League season are so often shaped by what happens in that in that tournament, in and around that tournament. So I think it's a really important thing that they should be integrating through coverage, and they might. I mean, I think when it comes down to it, guys like Ravi Musto and Danny Higginbotham talk about the Euros, right? It seeps into their analysis as this Champions League, even though there seems to have been an institutional decision by NBC not to talk about Champions League very much, or talk about FA Cup very much, or talk about League Cup very much, or the Euros.
And then just a couple more things about the Champions League. This week, I thought the Robert Lewandowski pre-match interview on Wednesday was fantastic. Hearing him speak English and talking about being injured and when he's going to be coming back, but also talking about a little bit about his personal life and his goals and what he thinks of Erling Haaland, etc. I thought that was really, really good piece of television, something that we don't see that often. I thought Clive Tildsley's commentary on Wednesday was very good, as was Peter Drury on Tuesday for those big games. But the one point I would like to add, though, too, is that on Tuesday's matches, you had two really bizarre decisions in that Man City Dortmund game in the first half. And at halftime, I want a referee analyst to be analysing those. CBS Sports has Christina Uncle on staff, so she's available if you want to incorporate her into the broadcast. But instead, they had Jamie Carragher and Micah Richards discussing the points, discussing those decisions. And when you have players or analysts doing that, they're not referee experts. They're not on top of the latest all the latest developments with refereeing and know every little intimate detail. That's where you need a Christina Uncle. And to Fox's credit, too, I mean, at least with Dr. Joe, they had somebody on staff who could actually break things down and give us a good reason of what happened and why. And I think that it was really crying out for Christina Uncle on Tuesday. So that's a big miss there, I think, from CBS.
Yeah, I totally agree. I'd like to know the referee's perspective on how the referee can miss a call like the Bellingham call that I referenced earlier in the show, because that's also kind of heartbreaking from the perspective of a young English player. You get, as we're saying, Carragher saying, take this guy to the tournament because he's going to be the guy we build around in 4 to 6 years. What a confidence boost that would be for him away from home, coming back to England as an England international, full England international, to score that goal. And instead he gets booked. So I would love to know what the referee's angle was, the trajectory, why he made the decision that somehow Ederson had been interfered with. Which, if anything, it might be a foul the other way, right? Although, no, it's no foul. It should be just a goal. But,
right.
Yeah, so I think that was a big miss. And I think the fact of the matter is, because of the nature of Champions League, which is this one and two-off competition, right? It's not the league. And I say it all the time that we complain about officiating at the league level, but over a 38-match Premier League season, 34-match Bundesliga season, 38-match Liga 1 season, etc., these calls tend to even out for clubs. And we obsess about certain calls in matches and say, oh, if this had gone this way, this team would have two more points. They wouldn't have drawn. They would have won, and they would have won the title, or they would have been in the Champions League, or they wouldn't have been relegated. But those things tend to even out. They don't in Champions League. Mm-hmm. We've seen it time and time again generally, most Champions League winners have had a lot of good fortune in terms of officiating. And I would include both Pep victories in that, in Barcelona in 2009 and 2011. I would include Real Madrid the year that they had all these kind of strange calls against Bayern. I want to say that I can't remember if that was the quarterfinals or the semifinals. Every call went their way. And there have been others, too. I would even argue maybe Real Madrid in the year they beat Atleti in the final. A lot of strange calls. So you need to have someone on staff ready to talk about that, because there are more. The decisions are more important than we talk about. Well, we wish Clattenburg was in the NBC studio more. We do, but it's actually more critical. CBS have Christina Uncle in their studio because of the nature of the competition they're covering versus NBC having Clattenburg in their studio.
Yeah. Even if it's a satellite transmission or a Skype transmission where she's on call, if something does happen in any of these games where it is controversial, and we need an expert's opinion to break it down, to tell us. I mean, maybe we missed something. Maybe the commentator didn't see something, or maybe the analysts got it wrong. Whatever it may be, it always is very, very helpful to have an opinion there, an expert opinion. And like Tuesdays, she probably would have had like 5 minutes at least on that halftime show. Wednesday, probably there's no need to call her. But maybe next week too, like you said, Kartik. These big games often come down to big calls, and the viewers, I think, would appreciate getting some expert opinion on why calls go certain ways when it looks like there's a mistake. Maybe it wasn't a mistake. In this case, it was, but oftentimes it may not be a mistake. It might be just that the fans don't know the latest rules of the game, because it just does change so quickly so often. All right, Kartik, let's move on to TV streaming news. And Wednesday, this week you had a chance to talk to CBS Sports and NWSL about their coverage of the Challenge Cup, which begins on Friday, which is their League Cup. It's an in-season cup. It's kind of the inaugural, it's kind of the beginning of the new season before it goes into the regular season. But I wanted you to kind of talk for a few minutes about what you've learned so far and whether or not you're excited about this new season's coverage.
Yeah, so spent some time with CBS and talked to NWSL also in anticipation of the new season, which kicks off Friday night. CBS Sports Network, Houston and Chicago is the first match. And actually, let me mention, that is the Challenge Cup, right? So effectively last year, we know that there was a competition that they had in Utah that was a closed-door bubble competition. And this year they're going to be repeating that in at home venues, but it's a cup competition, right? And it's going to be 1 month, 21 matches. All 21 matches will be aired on CBS Sports Network, CBS over the air. The final will be CBS over the air or Paramount Plus. So all 21 matches from that competition. Exciting development. JP Della Camera, who we think very highly of on this show, and I think most people around American soccer do, is going to be the lead announcer for the big matches on CBS Network Television and a few of the matches on CBS Sports Network. So talk to NWSL about that. They're very excited to have JP Della Camera as a voice of their league. That's a big step for them. They'll continue on with Jen Hildreth and Lori Lindsay doing a lot of the CBS Sports Network matches. Jen Hildreth has been doing NWSL from the beginning and did WPS before that as the lead commentator. And I should mention Allie Wagner will be paired with JP Della Camera, which I think everybody kind of assumed, but probably who was listening. But that it is Allie Wagner. CBS is very, very committed to NWSL. That's one thing I learned, Chris, as they gain more rights in their soccer portfolio. They've gained, obviously, Serie A, Argentine League, Brasileiro, all the CONCACAF rights, in addition to having the UEFA club competitions and NWSL. NWSL still has a significant place because they see it as an elite Premier level like league to go along not just with their other soccer content, but to go along with their other sports content. They show the NFL, they show the Masters, they show SEC football. For now, they're losing the rights, but they show SEC football, which is the Premier. It's like the Premier League, right, of college football in many people's minds, and the NCAA basketball tournament. So to them, NWSL is a Premier property, which is why you see such a commitment to showing games even on over-the-air CBS. The other thing I would mention, Chris, is that they were pleased by the ratings last year. I don't think you and I on this show and in print have speculated that NWSL, if with the right broadcast partner, could get similar numbers to MLS, right? Mm-hmm. It was a theory of ours, but yeah. It had never been tested until last season because they had always been on networks that were also covering MLS and treated it as a second-tier throwaway property in ESPN and Fox, or were on Lifetime, which most people just didn't think of for watching sports. Although they had some matches on Lifetime that got decent numbers, as we've talked about in that era on the podcast. But now that they're on a mainstream network that is pushing them and even giving them broadcasts over the air, the numbers have been very impressive, and the league is in a very different place, I think, from a public relations, public perception standpoint, being on CBS than they were a couple of years ago when they were had that A&E deal, which had them on Lifetime, and before that on Copa 90 and all these I can't even remember what was it, Copa 90, what was it, Go 90, right. And all these different carriers, and then they were on ESPN for half a season, but it was kind of throwaway on ESPN News, etc. So very, very positive developments. Real quickly, season kicks off Friday on CBS Sports Network. CBS Sports Network has aired a documentary already at the time of we're recording this that they will re-air a couple times this week on The Bubble. They call it the original bubble. NWSL was the first American professional sports league to go into a bubble before baseball or basketball or men's soccer, MLS or hockey. First North American sport to do that. So they have a nice little documentary about that. And then they will have the final of the Challenge Cup in early May on CBS over the air. They will also have the final of the NWSL regular season in November on CBS over the air. And last little tidbit, the door is open for maybe putting moving more matches to CBS. So that's a very, very encouraging thing. And maybe if those numbers are good, they'll be encouraged to move Serie A matches to CBS also. So I think it's a rising tide lifts all boats in soccer.
Yeah, so every match will be on Paramount Plus, as well. Correct. as yes. Kartik mentioned, some of the games on CBS Sports Network, some of the games on CBS Over the Air Network. And what's interesting about this, Kartik, I think from my opinion, is that there's definitely a buzz, there's an excitement, there's a freshness about NWSL, and it reminds me of some of the early days of Major League Soccer, where there was excitement. I mean, NWSL has been around for a while, but it reminds me of some of the early days of MLS. And I think in some ways, NWSL is a good league. It's entertaining to watch, but it also benefits from not having a lot of competition in the women's professional soccer leagues. So you've got the Women's Super League, but most of those games are on the FA player. I think most soccer fans, talk about mainstream soccer fans, most mainstream soccer fans probably aren't even aware that the FA player exists. Some of the games, yes, will be on NBCSN, but usually only on weekends when there's no Premier League matches on. It's an FA Cup weekend or it's an international break. So I think a big advantage, and it's a good thing, is that NWSL doesn't have a lot of competition for women's club soccer on television. So it has an opportunity, just like Major League Soccer did in its early years, to really establish a foothold, a foundation, and then build from there. And I think a lot of the decisions that NWSL are making about the way that the league is run and how it seems to be, they're very fresh, transparent, creative, and in terms of the deals that they're signing, some of these sponsorship deals, I'm excited. I'm definitely going to watch some of the games. And I think it helps to have a really strong partner with CBS Sports that we saw last year. Some of the coverage of those games had a different feel to it. It didn't feel like the UEFA Champions League coverage from CBS. It had its own persona. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to definitely catching up and watching some games this weekend from that Challenge Cup.
And I think the other thing I wanted to say about this is, Chris, when you compare it to early days of MLS, I think we're at a point now where we know NWSL is going to make it. I think the early years of the league,
yep,
a lot of us were thinking the league was just going to fold like the previous two incarnations of women's professional leagues in this country, and weren't as committed and as into it. It took me a few years. I was following it, but it was okay. I don't want to be let down by this league collapsing again. But what they've gotten past several hurdles now, and I think the CBS deal actually just ensures they're going to be around. I mean, that to me is huge.
Which is also reminiscent of the early days of Major League Soccer, when there was a lot of talk talk about whether the league would be folding, and it was very close to folding at one stage in the early 2000s, and then contracted a couple of teams, kept on going, and has grown from there. So Kartik's got more information about, it goes into more detail about the coverage plans, as well as some quotes from some interviews he did. And that's at, on the homepage of worldsoccertalk.com. Now, I mentioned that all of the games are going to be on Paramount Plus. Speaking of Paramount Plus, this week also at worldsoccertalk.com, we have an interview with one of the executives at CBS Sports about Paramount Plus and what their goals are. How do they see themselves as a streaming platform? What are some of their ambitious intentions for Paramount Plus in the future? And while I won't read the whole article, I'm just going to pull out a few quotes. Again, you can read the full story and all the other quotes at worldsoccertalk.com. But in my interview with Jeffrey Gratula, who's the CBS Sports executive there, he says, in terms of being asked the question about acquiring more soccer rights, and as the listener, you know, there's a lot out there this year. Possibility of La Liga, possibility, there's definite Premier League, Major League Soccer next year, and other leagues too, the Dutch League, etc. So CBS Sports, Jeffrey Gatula says, we're always looking. Our mission in trying to make this a must-subscribe service is that we're looking at everything. We're assessing the numbers. We love this audience. We think we can build a product that is something very special and that shows care and respect for the game. We're looking at everything. We don't feel like we're done. We will definitely have more announcements as the year progresses. We have a variety of things in the works. Viacom CBS believes in a strategy of looking at acquiring more rights for Paramount Plus. They're giving us the resources to attack where it makes sense. So without promising too much, we're definitely going to be looking at rights as they come up. We think we can change the game for soccer broadcasting, and that's what we're setting out to do. We're super excited. We're passionate about this. We live and die with the audience. We get it. Our job is to keep getting better. So some strong words there from CBS in terms of their intentions. So they're definitely communicating that that they understand the audience. They're passionate as we are. They want the best soccer coverage. They want to do their own take on it, which is giving us more of the storytelling aspect, telling us more about, the history of the Boca River Derby from the Argentine League as one example. And even with Serie A coverage too, maybe having more of the storytelling sides of things. So maybe having some features or some documentaries, etc. I don't know, for me, I mean, who knows what rights they'll pick up in the next 6 to 12 months. But I'm excited. I think they've got good intentions. I think that their play is that almost everything will be on Paramount Plus. I mean, that's their goal, is they're a tough competitor to ESPN Plus. ESPN Plus finally has a really tough competitor. But I'm excited where they're going to take this, because I've been really impressed by the coverage of the NWSL and the Champions League and the Europa League. And I think there's a lot of potential there to really kind of make this even bigger than what it is currently. All right, Kartik, let's move on to listener mailbag. First up is Alex. Alex says, I just want to talk about the European Super League idea the European Super League that you talked about. This may have been discussed, but here are my solutions to this problem that Euro Soccer has. It breaks down to competition and money. Right now, money for some teams is no issue and makes other teams in the league not as competitive. So the first way to change things is to create the Super League with a type of round-robin promotion, meaning you have the size of the league to whatever they were talking about, 16 to 20 teams. Then you could have a bottom 2 to 3 teams that would be relegated back to the country's first league divisions, and champions of their home league would be promoted. So there is some excitement in winning the home title and then not knowing if you might get promoted to the Super League. The second way is not as exciting, but it works just as well. The leagues must put in hard salary caps. The teams must budget out their money. I know not all the teams can afford to be at the top limits in the NFL salary cap, but it gives some fairness. I watch many teams over time overspend on some players for them to get hurt on salary later in the future. To me, it's the only way to see teams compete with a lot of big-name teams. To me, remove the top 4 to 6 Premier League teams, and now the other teams could play and compete like the Championship, or you keep them and make the top 4 to 6, making them spend less and have to make harder decisions on who they bring in. No offense, Alex, but I completely disagree with all this. One, I'm against the whole concept of the European Super League in the first place. And two, I'm against the whole idea of having salary caps. I think it's if Russian oligarchs or tycoons want to invest as much money as they want to into a club, and no matter what happens to that club, whether they go up or go down or whatever, to me, it makes it more exciting rather than having a really boring salary cap where they have to work within. Now, that may not be the future, Kartik, but I don't know. I just do not like that approach.
Yeah, I don't like salary caps. What I do like are luxury taxes. So I think that there can be a guideline for what you can spend, and if you go over it, you pay a fine into the into a kitty that gets divided among the other clubs. So I'm an anti-salary cap guy. I do think it's anti-competitive, and I think it also prevents investment. I mean, one of the things you want in this sport is more investment. You want more people to be putting their money in their sport, and it ultimately helps the communities they're in also. But I do think a luxury tax, which, by the way, I've talked to since the NASL had obviously their legal issues with U.S. soccer and have stopped playing. Talked to a number of people in that league, which I had previously worked in, but was not working in at the time, that they did implement a luxury tax. There were a few teams that had to pay because they went over the prescribed limit, and they were able to distribute funds to the other teams. So it is a way of being a deterrent, but also saying, hey, if you do go above that line, we will help the rest of the league. It's not just going to be something you can blow past without consequence.
Gene says, Paramount Plus becomes the big winner in the near future. The Nations League games against Honduras and either Mexico or Costa Rica just became must-see if you're a fan of the U.S. men's national team. Berhalter has already stated he wants a full squad at these matches. It's important for this team to not only play well, but to get results and build chemistry as they move on to World Cup qualifying in September. Very true. I think good points there by Gene. Jozinho says, as much as I would like to see the U.S. men's national team perform just as well in the World Cup as American athletes in the Olympics, the real problem is the competition within CONCACAF does not incentivize the U.S. to play at a higher level as one would expect a senior national team to perform. I wonder how much the level of interest would increase for the U.S. men's national team if there was a combined Copa America every 4 years, for example, 2024 and 2028, instead of just the Gold Cup. In my opinion, the U.S. men's national team wouldn't need the Olympics at that point, except only to draw attention to their under-23 squad. If the USA were to ever win the World Cup, it would only begin with a merger between CONCACAF and CONMEBOL. So the US would start competing with the likes of Colombia, Uruguay, and Chile for World Cup qualification. Stronger competition is warranted if the US men's national team are to ever be taken seriously on the global stage. Good points by Jozinho. Actually, for me personally, Kartik, I agree that it's never going to happen. We're never going to have CONCACAF merge with CONMEBOL. But there could be opportunities for them to say, hey, let's work together and actually have another tournament, maybe staged in the U.S. or staged in U.S. and Mexico, where it is going to be kind of a split Copa American Gold Cup or something like that. The thing about this, though, too, is that some of the U.S. soccer fans of the U.S. men's national team are so fickle that if you didn't have the Gold Cup and you had the U.S. enter just the Copa America, that would be combined, and the U.S. would get knocked out in the group stage, maybe, say, the first one or two tournaments. I think, if anything, actually, the level of excitement and morale and support for the U.S. men's national team would drop. But having said that, though, too, the actual playing level and competing against these better teams would actually help the U.S. in the long run. I'm just not so sure that U.S. Soccer Federation, for the short term, would be willing to do that because they think they'd be losing so much money.
No, they're not. Actually, we've already been down this road. The U.S. tried to propose in replacement of a Copa America back in 2019. They proposed some sort of tournament where they would have a combined competition inviting South American countries and having it in the United States. And what happened with that was the South American federations, and the answer for the U.S. Federation to everything is money, right?
Right.
Everything they think comes down to money. So Cordero said, "Hey Chile, hey Uruguay, we'll give you we guarantee you X amount of compensation for this competition," and they blew them off because I think the U.S. wants to have these competitions, but they want it in the U.S. so they make money. So CONMEBOL has now shown that they will not go for that anymore. They went for it once with 2016. It was a centenario, was a commemoration, so they did it. They will not go for it again. In addition, the situation right now is that CONCACAF is a federation which is got 41 countries, and most of those are island nations. Most of those are nations that depend economically on having a competition which they can qualify for and make money off of. Okay, these are not wealthy nations. So, again, there's a lot of hope among U.S. soccer fans and fans from Mexico and Canada that they can break off and play at a higher level. But that will never happen. That will never be permitted. In fact, CONCACAF has probably indulged the U.S. and Mexico more than they should in certain things. So I don't think it all makes sense from a football standpoint, but it doesn't make any sense from a financial standpoint and won't happen for that reason, because the finances are what drive these things, not football.
Exactly. Fetchin says, "I hope Discovery Plus does not win the Premier League bidding rights. I don't need another service to just watch soccer. Discovery Plus, for me, to subscribe is that they need at least more than one sport that I can watch for me to subscribe. If Peacock doesn't retain the rights, then I think Peacock is over for me, unless they can renew the rights to the NHL or get Ligue 1 or something." Nick says, "NBCSN has lost the plot. I'm watching the Premier League match this past weekend with my team, Leeds United, against Sheffield United. NBCSN has been disrespectful to this match throughout. Less than 3 minutes before the game, NBC is still not switched to pre-match build-up and is instead showing a Pulisic interview. Halftime commentary has no relevance to the match, but is instead more garbage about the Pulisic substitution. Highly disrespectful to non-Big Six teams and the live match. Hopefully NBC loses the rights because we as Premier League fans deserve better." That's a great example there, Kartik, of somebody that is a fan of a team that's not in the Big Six.
Yeah, thank you for that, Nick. This is exactly what I keep talking about, both on this show and on Twitter and in personal conversations. And I thought it had gotten a little better since December, but then we saw a backsliding.
It's gotten better since December because there's been really nothing.
It was terrible. Horrible.
Well, because there's been nothing to say about Pulisic. He hasn't been playing games.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's not just Pulisic thing. It's that they don't talk about if it's a match involving Sheffield United, that team's not interesting to them, or Southampton's not interesting to them, so they don't talk about those teams even if they're playing. But yeah, the Pulisic thing also, right? That they ad nauseum, and unfortunately, you know, this is creating this thing in the U.S. where there's this resentment of every player who's not Pulisic on Chelsea. You know, I went through it last year because I'm a big Mason Mount advocate, and I'm not a big Mason Mount advocate because he's on the same team as Pulisic and I want him to play. He's just genuinely, from a perspective of an attacking midfielder, the best English young midfielder I've seen like this since Scholes or Lampard, seriously. Wow. So that's why I was a big proponent of him. But I got so much abuse for it because they're saying, oh, it's because Lampard's playing him because he's English and he's Lampard's boy. Now that anger has shifted to Timo Werner and to a lesser extent, Kai Havertz. So NBC is also ratcheting this up, and we see it on social media where any player on Chelsea that plays a remotely similar position to Pulisic, because all the three of these players I mentioned do not play actually the same position as Pulisic's ideal position, although Werner can play on the left side. Mm-hmm. But there's this like feeding frenzy now where and any substitution, anytime Werner is talked about on NBC in the studio, it's relative to Pulisic, right? His name always comes up in the conversation. Anytime Ziyech is talked about in the studio, it's relative to Pulisic. So, yeah, I totally get you, Nick. Between the Pulisic thing and the disrespect for non-Big Six clubs, NBC wasn't like this when they first covered the Premier League. It's changed completely.
Has it always been like this, though, Kartik? I mean, even before,
I don't think it was.
But even before Pulisic, though, you mean it's and just in general. I mean, anything a US player does anywhere, right? Like a substitution appearance, somebody comes on for as a second half sub, or someone scores, gets an assist. It's like people on Twitter, especially, are like, "Oh my gosh, did you just see so and so and so and so?"
And people saying that Zach Steffen is better than Ed Ayrson. I mean, come on. That started with NBC talking about Steffen also. And it's like, I mean, come on.
Right.
I don't have time for someone who makes an idiotic comment like that.
It seems new to me. I mean, within the last 12 months or so, that it seems kind of it's ratcheted up. I don't remember it being this bad before, but maybe it depends on the people I follow, and I don't know.
I think you're right. I think so. We always on this show fingered Fox for this, but now I've seen what NBC's doing, and I'm thinking NBC. Fox may be more overt in Rob Stone shouting an American, and we know Lawless's take on some of this stuff, but NBC is much more aggressive about taking the analysis of anything else. And involving the American angle to it, at least when it comes to Chelsea. I mean, and then I saw it with Man City, right? Oh, is there now a goalkeeping controversy because Steffen kept a clean sheet? I mean, are you kidding?
Right.
Yeah. How do you compare a guy who gave up a lot of goals at Fortuna Dusseldorf last season and is a nice backup goalkeeper to Ed Ayrson, one of the top keepers in the world? And they started this whole thing on NBC.
Interesting. All right. Last but not least, Adolfo says, I would like to comment on things you said, Kartik, about Telemundo's coverage of Chivas against America, the game a few weeks ago. I felt the coverage was good, as Andres Cantor and Manuel Sol are as good as you can get calling matches in Spanish or, in my opinion, in any language. I prefer Telemundo to Univision, as Univision is largely owned by Televisa, and their coverage of anything other than Club America is minimal at best. Lastly, Telemundo coverage of the World Cup of 2018 blew anything Fox Sports did, and did as good, if not better, than what NBC, ESPN or Univision had when they had the World Cup rights. Do you agree?
Yeah, I generally agree with that, other than the Chivas America match. And again, good point, Adolfo. You might be right because of the Televisa angle, and now Televisa has invested directly, right? TUDN is a subsidiary, not a joint venture between Televisa, right, and Univision. That the America bias has gotten even stronger. I guess I'm just so used to them doing the matches. I think I did kind of. Give that caveat. I'm so used to them doing the matches. But yeah, Cantor and Sol are quality, and completely agree on the World Cup. I mean, they had me hooked. As we know, Chris, we talked about it at the time. I mean, I ended up watching some of the games on Fox just as a professional obligation for this show and for this website. Any match where I had my own preference and I could watch the match freely, I watched on Telemundo. They were great. And they also I think have done a very good job in general with tournaments. The Women's World Cup also, even though obviously the U.S. being the driver of that, it's also good to watch that in English. The U.S. and the UK and England being two of the top three or four teams in the world, always two English language teams. It's good to have English language coverage that you can watch for that on Fox. But yeah, I thought they were good with that. I thought they were really good with the Confederations Cup in 2017. Now, granted, Mexico was in that tournament, so there was incentive. But Chris, I think we were blown away, right, by how well they did in 2017 at the Confederations Cup, thinking, my goodness, if they do this for the Confed Cup, imagine how good World Cup coverage is going to be.
Yeah, and the World Cup coverage I liked a lot because you could tell it was very authentic. It was not just US-centric. It was very passionate. You could tell that the people behind the scenes and the people in front of the cameras were full-blooded soccer fans just as we are. They may speak a different language than us, but they're still soccer fans just like us. We're hardcore fans. And not just supporting just our nation, but just enjoying just the beautiful game as far as just the pure beauty of whatever team it is, whatever player it is, the history, the tradition, and really understanding, I think, the World Cup. And I think even though it's in a language that you and I don't speak or understand a lot of Spanish, a little bit, yes, but I was still able to actually appreciate Telemundo's coverage so much better than what Fox's coverage was. And I had to, at times I had to force myself to watch Fox's coverage to stay on top of it because that's part of my job is being an analyst and understanding and knowing what the English language networks are doing. And at times it was really painful to watch that because I was like, oh my gosh, this is night and day different than what Telemundo was doing. All right, listeners, we want you to have your say. You can always reach us via email through web@worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter @worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can post your comments on worldsoccertalk.com. Kartik, before you know it, I mean, next year is a World Cup. You know what I mean? We got Fox's coverage. It's going to be back, right? So don't get too. We got Fox and Telemundo will be back. November of 2022? It'll be here before you know it.
Yeah, it's very weird, actually, going through these conversations about the Euros to think about the fact that the World Cup is right behind it.
Yeah.
This time because of COVID. And actually, this might be where Qatar works out because I think it would be that much worse if the Euros were just 12 months before the World Cup. Instead, it's 17 months before the World Cup. We used to have this way back when with Copa America. I remember 2001. I think that was the last time Copa America was the year before World Cup, and then it was in Colombia, and a bunch of countries didn't send their A teams, and but one country, Argentina, pulled out completely. So that's also going to be awkward, having a Copa America the year before the World Cup, but I do remember once upon a time when that happened in 2001. But yeah, I think it's going to be very weird having these two major international tournaments the year before a World Cup, which is maybe a good thing for the guys that don't make the squads. Like we're talking about Trent Alexander-Arnold, there's a World Cup right behind it. He has an opportunity to get himself back into the team. And the flip side is there are guys when Carragher and Neville did that conversation about the England team, and I thought, my goodness, if this had been 12 months ago, that player would be in the team. Now they're not even discussing certain players that would have been in the team 12 months ago. So it's definitely a weird time.
So this weekend, Kartik, what's your game to watch? I mean, I've got the easy one, right? I've got I'm picking El Clasico, Real Madrid against Barcelona. What about you?
Well, that's what I was picking, and it's now really a huge match because it's effectively an elimination match for who's going to stay in the title race. Mm-hmm. Although maybe they're both in the title race the way Atleti's been playing of late, which unfortunately was predictable. So the other match that I was really interested in this week was the Napoli-Juve match. But that's already taken place as of when we're recording this show. So I would have to go with El Clasico. And I ended up watching I missed the pregame show you were talking about in the Lewandowski interview because I was watching Sassuolo, who's been a great story this season, take on Inter. And they took him to the brink. So,
yep. So it looks like the Italian league's over. The English league is over. The German league is over. We've got the Spanish league, the French league is still open, right?
Oh, yeah. The French league's wide open. So you have four teams within 4 points, 5 points. Lille has a 3-point lead over PSG. PSG is a point is in second. PSG's in second. They are a point ahead of Monaco, who were in third, who were a point ahead of Lyon in fourth. So there are four teams still in it. I think the way Lyon is playing of late, they're probably out of it. The reason Monaco may really have a good shot now is Jonathan David has gotten hurt for Lille, which is a very, very big injury. The Canadian international, mm-hmm. maybe their top player. And then Neymar has gotten himself suspended for PSG. Now, we saw him play well against Bayern in the Champions League, but he's suspended for the next two Liga 1 matches, and I think David is out for 2 or 3 weeks. So the door might be open for Niko Kovac at Monaco, who took over the team from Jardin and has been brilliant since he came in, and really kind of whatever – you were at Kovac's last match with Bayern, which he got sacked after against Eintracht, who he had done great with. He had done great with Eintracht and then was not the right fit for Bayern, but he's really rehabilitated his reputation. If there were four more matches in the season, I would say Monaco would win the league for sure. But it's not a 42-match season. It's a 38-match season, and they've got to still have to chase down PSG and Lille, 4 points. I think they might do it.
Yeah, and the French league, for anyone who's interested, who wants to watch a promotion race, right, other than Spain, this weekend, there's three games on television. Actually, three games on streaming on Sunday on beIN Sports Connect. We've got the full schedule at worldsoccertalk.com, and also including Strasbourg against PSG on Saturday, and that one's on beIN Sports, the English language channel. So you can still watch most of the games, Ligue 1, if you want to stay on top of that league. And
I should mention really quickly for the audience, since we're on this U.S. thing and we were bashing the Pulisic talk, I will give some positive American talk. Jonathan David's injury has opened the door for Timmy Weah to start, and it appears like he will be the direct replacement and he will be starting in his place. So that's an American international replacing an injured Canadian international. Nice CONCACAF story, but also a title race on the line, and Tim Weah is going to play a big role in that. And Lille are 3 points clear right now, 7 matches to go.
And I think last week's podcast, we teased some news and said, stay tuned next week. They might have a big announcement. That big announcement hasn't been made yet, but there will be a big announcement next week. So check out worldsoccertalk.com for that. And thanks for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Every episode is released on Amazon Music, Spotify, Pandora, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Audio Boom, Overcast, and WorldSoccerTalk.com, as well as all of your favorite podcast players. And if you like the show, share it with your friends on social media. And we'd really, really appreciate it if you can give us a review on iTunes. It definitely helps the show. And Kartik, El Clasico, NWSL, USL, Premier League, you name it. I mean, there's so many leagues this weekend. And it's probably about, on Saturday alone, there's probably about 60 to 75 games available. It's so many to choose from. But what are you going to be doing this weekend, and what should the listeners do?
Enjoy your football.